We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the Barcelona Podcast, episode 149. The Missing Opinion is brought to you by the most influential voices in the FC Barcelona community. I'm Dan Hilton, and today I have the pleasure of welcoming writer for AS and the Liga journalist returning back to the show, Robbie Dunn. Hello, Robbie. Happy preseason.
Hey, how you doing, Dan? Thanks for having me back.
Well, today Robbie is on the show not to talk about Barcelona starting preseason against Chelsea. For that, you can check out our Patreon with the match review as well as a video on our YouTube channel about the preseason later in the week, because today we are talking the rest of the Liga, so not much Barcelona talk. Robbie, I got to tell you, I'm exhausted of the Neymar talk. We saw Griezmann for 45 minutes against Chelsea, so I think it's time that we talk about everybody else because the rest of La Liga has been moving up and down that transfer window. And before we get started, I actually just want to ask you, which team of all the teams, other 19 teams we're going to talk about, excites you the most to talk about?
There's a couple of massive teams with massive turnover, I guess, and I don't know if excited is the word. Some teams I'm worried about, some teams I don't really, a lot of the players they've brought in, I don't know. So the likes of Sevilla, on paper and in theory, it looks great and there's loads of movement and there's loads of transfers, but we don't actually know how these players are going to fit in. Atletico have had a massive summer. I'm actually really excited about them. Barcelona obviously adding Griezmann to their attack. Yeah, I'm excited to see the promoted teams coming up. Mallorca especially had a pretty special run in the playoffs to get promoted in the end, and they've got a pretty interesting story there coming up from Segunda B up to Segunda and then all the way into La Liga. So there's plenty of teams that I'm excited about. Oh, and also Real Sociedad, they've completely overhauled their attack, haven't they? They've added a lot of youth. It looks like, well, there was talk that Borja Mayoral is going to go there as well from Real Madrid. So they've got four on paper again. pretty exciting young talents with Odegaard, Isaac, Porto and Mayoral. And if they can make that work, they're going to be one of the most interesting teams definitely to watch this season.
Yeah, for sure. And you mentioned with Mayoral, where Real Madrid is one of those teams, because they're selling off to not necessarily a lot of other La Liga teams, but we knew there's going to be a lot of movement for Real Madrid. And Atletico Madrid, I'd say, have really been the first domino of the transfer season. But we're going to start here with Real Madrid. They were third in La Liga last season. They brought in Eden Hazard, Luka Jovic, Eder Militao, Ferland Mendy, Rodrigo, Takefusa Kubo, and they didn't really lose anybody of note, as we mentioned. If Zidane didn't like him and didn't want to plan on using him, including Dani Ceballos or Marcos Llorente, then they're on their way out. And the biggest story here that we've been following is Gareth Bale, Robbie, and with the assumption that Gareth Bale will not be with Real Madrid for another week or two now. But I got a hot take for you. I think that the Gareth Bale saga and all the bad press is coming from that is really good for all the other names we mentioned, whether it's Hazard, Jovic, Mendy. It takes the pressure off of all these new arrivals because the media circus is surrounding a player that might not be there in a few weeks.
Yeah, and it also takes the pressure off incoming signings, because at the end of the day, it's kind of a strange one, because Real Madrid, you know, like, the way we discuss and the way that we analyze transfer markets and teams that get their work done early, it looks like they had their work done, their homework done, and they got in and acted fast, got the players they wanted in to start pre-season at the right time. Real Madrid did that, and at the start they were the clear winners of the transfer market, and they had all this work done before anyone really got off, got going themselves. But now they've kind of slowed down, and when you look at it on paper, okay, Hazard is world class, and he adds definitely something to the team, and he's going to be, I think he's going to be excellent, and for the 100 million that they got him for, I think it's excellent. He's in the prime of his career, all of that. But then when you look at the other players, like Marcelo is going to start at left back, so Ferlin Mendy is going to back him up. Then you look at the likes of Jovic, who's going to back up Benzema, and then Militao is going to back up Ramos Varane. They haven't really added, and he's gotten rid of, not quite yet, but he's going to get rid of Ceballos, who's flown to London today and looks like he's going to sign with Arsenal. He's gotten rid of Marcus Llorente, and they looked quite open at the back without Casemiro. So what happens if Casemiro goes down in 2 games into the season? He doesn't really have a natural backup, stuff like that. So I think, and it was funny because Jose Mourinho kind of passive-aggressively said that Zidane is going to be tested now. This is his first proper test. He's building his own squad now. And I think he really needs to reinvigorate that midfield and refresh it, because that was a problem area for them last season. Isco isn't going to get in there and get his hands dirty and do the kind of engine work that's required. Neither is Asensio or any of these players. And Pogba is definitely needed for what Zidane seems to be trying to do, is turn them kind of into a mini France, or maybe not mini France, but a different version of France, this kind of pragmatic, energetic, physical side. And then you get all the youngsters, who Kubo looks excellent, Rodrigo looks excellent. Every time he touched the ball the other day, he was fouled and scored that wonderful goal. All look excellent, but it looks like they're probably going to go to either Castilla or maybe Zidane hasn't ruled out loans for them. So one thing we know for sure is that Castilla are probably going to be excellent next year under Raul, but are they going to fit into the first team? I'm not quite sure. Like, how much better have they gotten? They've gotten loads of backups and they've improved their squad depth, but have they gotten better at any positions other than Hazard? I couldn't say for sure.
Yeah, I actually think back to the late 80s when the Real Madrid Castilla was basically at the peaks of their power, if you will. But the Real Madrid first team wasn't getting the success that they would have liked. And I got to tell you, Robbie, I instituted last week a strict no Takefusa Kubo talk here on the podcast. So we're going to have to move on to Atletico Madrid for that reason. And I think they're an example of a team that they brought in so much. João Felix from Benfica, obviously, with the Antoine Griezmann money that they knew was coming in because tampering's not real. Marcos Llorente from Real Madrid. Mario Hermoso from Espanyol. Kieran Trippier from Tottenham. Hector Herrera from Porto, Renan Lodi coming in from Brazil, pretty much an unknown at the left-back position, Felipe coming in from Porto, and potentially the biggest of the bunch, James Rodriguez. There are rumors about him, but that's not official yet. I think that really is, you know, the big name that we'd see other than João Felix, because, again, he's still a teenager. We don't know what he's going to get. But then you look at Atletico Madrid, for all they brought in, as exciting as that is, they've lost Griezmann, Lucas Hernandez to Bayern. They lost Rodri, maybe their best player last season, to Man City. Diego Godin, after all these years, I know he wasn't as great as he was last year, as he's always been, you know, an all-time La Liga legend. Going to Inter, Angel Correa, AC Milan just this week, and then Felipe Luis just today going to Flamengo. But again, Felipe Luis not at the peak of his powers anymore either. All that said, Atletico Madrid have had basically as much out as they have in. Do you think that's going to take Diego Simeone a little bit of time to adjust everybody to that system?
Yeah, certainly. But one of the things he also wanted to make sure of this summer was that he did get those players in to start preseason, because, as you know, he demands a lot from his players. He requires that kind of that physical side from all of his players, and also his tactics are very specific. He's very detail orientated, and he wanted to make sure everyone was in. So he's gotten everyone in, and we saw the pictures and we saw the footage of him, of the Trippier getting the Mono Burgos treatment. He was being told exactly what was expected of him. So yeah, it's interesting because you said Rodri, they lost Rodri, and it's absolutely a blow, but It did also feel like he didn't really fit in at Atletico. He was kind of a peg in a round hole at times, and Llorente might be a little bit more physical, a little bit more willing to cover ground, be it that Simeone holding midfielder. Obviously, massive question marks. Is Joao Felix going to step in and continue on from his form from last season? He looks the part. He spoke quite well at his presentation. Also, Simeone brought in some nice experience with the likes of Felipe and Hector Herrera there. They've added depth. And then they've got a Mario Hermoso, wonderful.
I really like him. Yeah, really like that.
Yeah, really.
You really like that signing,
and you could definitely argue that he's an upgrade on Diego Godin, the Diego Godin from last season. That is, and you're also replacing the Diego Godin from this. What we're expecting from him this season, he's a year older. He's 33 now, and he has been regressing. So, I mean. That's it. You consider that an upgrade. Obviously, they've lost a leader in the dressing room, but it's a whole new dynamic now. And I think with Griezmann, I know that Griezmann's his salary definitely caused some friction in the team last season. And there were some players kind of wondering why he was paid so much and they were kind of not being looked after as well. And now that Griezmann's gone, it's a little bit more fair, maybe a little bit more of a the hierarchy has kind of restored itself to a natural place. And I think they'll definitely improve. Not definitely, but they'll definitely benefit from that as a locker room and as a team.
Yeah, I mean, we've talking about the top three in Barcelona and the two Madrid teams, with Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid going through such big overhaul. Barcelona has this season been the constant where, again, just picking up Griezmann. Now, obviously, I think the Neymar stuff is starting to die down. Hopefully, that would throw a monkey wrench in. On the opposite side of that, outside of the big three, if you will, Sevilla, who finished sixth last season, which for them, I think they would have. I mean, Sevilla, I think, always wants and is going for that fourth place spot. That's what they want. They want Champions League. But finishing sixth, they brought in the cavalry. That's who they brought in. You mentioned them at the top of this. Jules Koundé from Bordeaux, Wernas Dabar, the Israeli striker from RB Salzburg in Austria, Lucas Ocampos, who's been around France for a while, playing for Marseille, Diego Carlos from Nantes in France, Joan Jordan from Eibar, maybe the biggest pickup I want to say for them. Let's mourn him in a second. Luke de Jong, experienced Dutch striker from PSV. Oliver Torres, Atletico Madrid youth, returns after many years with Porto. Maximilian Wolber from Ajax, the I believe Austrian center back, can play left back, right back as well. Fernando from Galatasaray adds a little bit of bite in that midfield. Sergio Reguilon from Real Madrid, even though he was liked last season, Zidane has already decided he's a little bit too much. Nemanja Gudelj from Evergrande, coming back from China to the European scene. And Brian Heal, who at the moment is playing with Juan Miranda and Alba Ruiz with Spain U19, so he actually isn't a part of Sevilla's preseason at the moment. And Sevilla lost Pablo Sarabia, who was terrific last season, Quincy Promps, Luis Muriel, Gabriel Mercado finally heads out the door at Sevilla, and Andre Silva goes back to AC Milan. So for Sevilla, they did lose a ton of their attacking prowess, but they also, again, brought in almost an entirely new team.
Absolutely, yeah. And I was just thinking, like, Julian Lopetegui, maybe not his last stand, but certainly his last chance maybe with a big top club, because obviously we saw him at Spain and he did worked wonders at Spain, but was never really tested in terms of, he never saw the World Cup, but they had that victory over Argentina. They looked absolutely like world beaters at times under his command, and then he came to Real Madrid, and the place was just you really and truly just can't judge him on that. They were trying to play a particular brand of football. They had just lost Ronaldo, they could not score for love nor money, and I think it would be really harsh to judge him on this. Having said that, Monchi is back at Sevilla, and he's doing what Monchi does best, and he's just buying kind of, none of those players are all that expensive. They're all young. Like, I mean, the oldest player I think is like Luke de Jong is 28. So you look at like the likes of some of the ones that jump off the page there, like Oliver Torres. I mean, he was really highly rated. Atletico kind of had a couple of problems with work rate and things like that, and maybe the more attacking style of football will suit him better. The likes of John Jordan, 24, like massively talented midfielder who will really fit into what Lopetegui is trying to do there. And I guess it's just a matter of how well he can get them all to blend together in a short period of time. But as you said, they finished sixth last season. So, I mean, that's who Sevilla are. That's their identity. And certainly that's their identity under Monchi. They have to keep reinventing themselves because they don't really have anything to lose. Okay, they could drop into the bottom half of the table. They can miss out on Europe and things like that. But they're never really going to drop that far, and they're never going to really and truly compete. So they're kind of in that area where they do have room to play around, I feel. And Monchi benefits from that. And every maybe two or three years, they really strike oil and get a team together that can maybe make it to the Champions League and things like that. But yeah, like, it just comes down to how well Lopetegui can get all these kind of youngsters, I don't want to say misfits, but this kind of, and it's not a ragtag bunch either, but like, you get the likes of Luke de Jong, Oliver Torres, the players who've kind of been to different leagues, and from, they're coming from League One, RB Salzburg, the Eredivisie, like, and they're kind of coming into La Liga, and it's about how well Lopetegui can get them to adapt to that, basically, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, for sure. There will be ones who succeed, and certainly on that whole list, they're not all going to succeed, and some will fail. And whether or not Lopetegui can basically squeeze as much talent as he possibly can out of that huge list is whether or not Sevilla, I think, finishes, I mean, potentially even third or fourth, as opposed to what they did last year with sixth. Now, we're going to switch gears and do the opposite thing, because we just talked about Sevilla bringing in all those players, and talking about an Athletic Bilbao transfer window, who finished eighth, by the way, last season. Talking about Athletic Bilbao transfer window is like trying to explain the flavor of water, Robbie. I don't know what we're doing here. What they're doing, it's because of their policy. Obviously, they had Markel Suseta, Mikel Rico, longtime player. They left on free transfers, as well as Sabine Marino, who went to Leganés, born him later. Ander Iturraspe goes to Espanyol, and Alex Remiero goes to Sociedad. Now, Basque, my pronunciation not so great with those names, but they've all been replaced with three youngsters, Peru, Nalakun, who we saw at the in a rare appearance last season. He plays at center back, can play defensive midfield as well. But, I mean, Bilbao, it's going to be more about trusting their system. And the guys, though, that they are bringing in, those three youngsters, two of the three we've seen before in different leagues. So for Bilbao, it is more of the same. Instead of cashing in and using a lot of the money that they built from the Kepa transfer, it seems like their list of players that they could potentially bring in of Basque origin was limited, even with the Kepa money this season.
Yeah, absolutely, and I just say they're kind of their whole identity obviously is built around the team, the structure, the area, the region, and Garitano obviously came in and settled the ship there last season, and he's got his first season as a manager proper, and he definitely made them better when he did come in. So I'm sure he'll be trying to build on that. And a couple of those younger players who he'll know from the underage system coming through as well. And so they lost those players. And I thought like Susaeta was quite good last year as well. Obviously Mikel Rico is getting on, but I'm surprised that they didn't offer Susaeta an extension. And he's still without a club, it seems like. So yeah, as I said, it's kind of hard to assess it because they're young guys coming through. Garrett, they're just, I mean, they'll be really disappointed with last season, I'd say, because given the fact that they finished eight and they started so poorly, they feel like they might be feeling like maybe they could have gone two or three steps further if they had got the time and didn't waste those first maybe 6 to 7 months.
I think they continue to be incredible to me just because of the world of the transfer window and the global football the way it is now, the way that they can continue to survive in La Liga with that policy, not only for as long as they have. Obviously, they're the only other team with Real Madrid and Barca who've never been relegated. But as you know, I feel like we're in a point now, basically over the last, 6-7 years since the transfer numbers went completely bonkers, that every year that they survive seems to be more and more of a compliment to the structure that they have. And you mentioned coaching is at a premium there, and that's where it's important. If they don't have the infrastructure there, they're going to collapse like a house of cards immediately in the ways that we thought they would last season. And holding on to Iñaki Peña, Iñaki Williams, again, is, you know, the most important piece of their puzzle. And if they can continue to hold on to him and he can continue to bang in some goals, maybe bang in some goals both home and away this season would be big for him. But let's move on to Valencia, where we have a former Barcelona goalkeeper in Jasper Cillessen. I want to say that's their big move, but they basically, it's a swap with Neto. Bringing in Maxi Gomes from Celta de Vigo, a Barcelona target, was basically another swap for Santi Mina. They brought in Denis Shirashev from Villarreal, Mano Viejo from Cadiz, Jorge Sanz from Tenerife. So basically, Valencia not doing too much. They like their squad from last year. They held on to pretty much everybody. The only move we say they made was they sent promising backup left back Tony Lado to PSV to get some game time. So Valencia, do you like, I guess we'll say, their lack of transfer activity?
Yeah, well, that's another kind of a team that are built on their system, and Marcelino is obviously really, really detail orientated. It's an interesting one, bringing in Maxi Gomes and swapping him out for a player, Santi Mina. Like, Santi Mina would have complemented Rodrigo quite well, in that he could kind of play to the left and the right, whereas Maxi Gomez is just a pure number nine. He can't really do a whole lot more than that. And Rodrigo would be kind of similar. He's a little bit more agile, maybe. He could probably drop and possibly play as a second striker. But yeah, it's interesting to see what happens there. They were talking about the most recent friendly for Valencia, and they were saying about what Marcelino is trying to do, and it seems to be Maxi up front and maybe that they could slot in Rodrigo and things like that. So it's Marcelino is in his third year now, I believe, as the manager, or second. I can't think at the moment, but yeah, he's all about that detail, and obviously they did really well last season, won the Copa del Rey, and they'll be trying to move up another gear, and they'll be definitely vying for that Champions League space in next season, I'd say.
Well, and speaking of European finishes, last year, Getafe, again, you're based in Madrid, so you got to see them a bit. They finished fifth, and Barcelona fans know Marc Cucurella, instead of being kept as the backup left back, he was immediately, after being rebought from Eibar, he was immediately sent out on loan to Getafe for a little bit of a price. The two guys that Getafe have brought in, I think that, Robbie, again, you can be a testament to this, that they brought in players at the positions they needed. Now, we know that Getafe, with their system, was excellent last year defensively. They do all those things. The only place that you might be afraid would be scoring goals. So they brought in Jack Harper from Malaga, who, while he did play well in the second division, he's still a younger player, Scottish-Spanish player, 4 goals, 2 assists. But then Enric Gallego from Huesca, that was the big get I'd hear. He had 5 goals after he joined Huesca in January, was starring for Extremadura prior to that down in the Segunda. And just looking at his transfer stuff, what a story. They always talk about it on the Spanish Football Podcast with Sid Lowe, but the Catalan and Gallego hit, he was at Cornea twice, Alot, Valladolona, and Espanyol B before finally getting a shot. I think a crazy stat for him, though. 131 appearances down in the third tier, 48 goals, no assist. So I think Gallego, his career up to this point has told you exactly what he is and exactly who he is. And now the question is going to be, as Getafe are playing Champions League, but as Getafe will be playing Europa League as well as La Liga, we've seen throughout a lot of other leagues, I think even Köln is one of more recent examples in the Bundesliga, when teams have to go from basically being a relegation fighting team to being a Europa League playing across more fronts, it tends to really, really suffer. And so for me, Getafe, that would be the worrisome sign, that this just isn't going to be enough reinforcements to be in the Europa League and La Liga and try to even have the legs, not even compete, but to have the legs across all competitions.
Yeah, absolutely. And they do play that physical style under Bordalas. So yeah, that's going to be a concern. But Cucurella is definitely, I would say he's even an upgrade on Antunes, went down with a cruciate knee ligament injury, and he's 32. And I remember looking at his statistics at the time, and he was really, maybe not underrated, probably rated, but he wasn't spoken about enough, maybe, as kind of one of those driving forces from left back under Bordalas. And they've gotten a replacement for him now, which they didn't really have at the time when Antunes went down. So, and they've also got a youngster there, Uruguayan Matias Oliveira, who stepped in for Antunes. And he's really good as well. So they've replaced Antunes perfectly in that sense, which obviously was a problem area for them, is somewhere that they wanted to improve on. They've also kept Jenny, who's absolutely excellent, which is actually probably a more, at the moment they have him obviously, which is maybe a more impressive feat than any other player that they were going to bring in. Midfield, yeah, definitely you'd be concerned about their depth there, but they've had like a really interesting strategy in Getafe. I remember like when Getafe got relegated, they were kind of a little bit of a laughing stock maybe, due to the fact that they're a club in Madrid and they couldn't they're kind of out in the outskirts, obviously in the suburbs, and they couldn't ever really get that many the fans into their stadium, and they're kind of like the stepchild of La Liga and of Madrid football when you've got such massive clubs like Atletico and the storied Rayo Vallecano and Real Madrid, and Getafe were just kind of this bland also ran almost. But their transfer strategy has been underrated, I think. Like, I mean, they brought in, for example, Jaime Mata last season, and he was absolutely excellent, like a steal from the Segunda Division. And then they've gone and done that again, and it feels like maybe, and I don't know this obviously, but it feels like they've got like some kind of a strategy to bring in big, physical, strong goal scoring number nines and just kind of rotate them given the circumstantial team selection. So Jack Harper will be quite similar to maybe Jaime Mata. Not physically they're similar, maybe don't play the same style, but they've got like loads of options up front now where they can change the pace, change the tempo. So I think that their transfer strategy in that sense is correct, or they seem to think it is, and they're going with it, and they're just going to keep going with it until it stops working. So I'm not as concerned about that. But their midfield, yeah, they need to probably bring in a player or two to deal with the added games.
Well, now that they're in Europe, you could say that they might be a hipster pick to watch this season, because again, now they should be on people's radar after how successful they were last year, even though they don't play the attractive football that people want. And a team that could be another hipster pick this year, as we've heard Real Betis for the last few seasons, maybe they're some of that hipsterism, and we'll get to Betis in a minute, but of all that hipsterism is kind of dying down at Betis. I think Real Sociedad has kind of tried to build up that karma, as you mentioned at the top, by bringing in Porto from Girona, Alexander Isak, the 19-year-old from Dortmund, Modibo Sagnan, who he played for Lens in the second division in France last year, and please do not tell me or tweet at me that you watched him last year. You don't know who he is, but he's a young player that they brought in, very promising. Martin Odegaard is back on another Real Madrid loan, but this time he finally gets to play in the Liga after all this time. Again, the Norwegian is still in his early 20s, though, so it's not like Odegaard is too old for anything. So he's going to be an exciting one. And then they've promoted 17-year-old Ander Barranca, who is also currently with the Spain U19s at the moment. That is, again, he's just 17, but Real Sociedad have shown in recent years it's not just Bilbao that knows how to use their academy. So I think for Real Sociedad, when they promote and bring in a young player that they think is really good, you have to tend to believe them. And they finished ninth last season. So for me, I think this could be a high-flying team that winds up challenging for Europe, or this could be a team that winds up just not having it and winds up falling down the pecking order a little bit this season, maybe finishing a 14th, 15th, 16th.
You'd wonder what's going on with their defense, maybe. But no, they looked way more solid after they changed coach last season too. But in attack, that guy you mentioned, Ander Barranca, or I think that's how you say it also. He was the guy that played and scored against Real Madrid at the end of last season. And I'm not saying I know him, or I'm not. I don't know him that well, but I saw him in that game, and he looked really well. But then, yeah. All reports coming out of coming from, like, you sometimes think maybe Odegaard is 24 or 5, like, oh, it's time. He's only 20, like, I mean, he's got loads of time. And anyway, people have been saying that when he went on loan, he was really good. And he might be the kind of player to knit that all together there, with the likes of Porto, add some pace in attack. They've already got Oyarzabal, who was absolutely excellent last year, probably set for another step forward next season. In attack and in midfield as well, they look absolutely fine. You'd wonder about their defence, but... and how that's going to work out, but no, I'd say they're going to be absolutely fine, and I would say definitely they'll be thinking about pushing for Europe. I would say next season, definitely given the players that they've added and are probably still going to add to.
Well, a team that pushed for Europe last year in Espanyol finished 7th. Now, that was the one place on my season preview that I got completely wrong last year. I mean, this is a Barcelona podcast, so I think I'm supposed to say that I think they're going to get relegated. I'm supposed to say that every year. And, you know, they did lose Hermoso, as we talked about, to Atletico Madrid. They lost Aaron Martin, their left back, to Mainz in the Bundesliga. We're finally seeing Sergio Garcia, after all this time, leave. So Culés can be happy that they don't have to look at Sergio Garcia's face anymore. They did bring in Fernando Espinosa from Girona as poor Girona. Again, I don't think they deserve to get knocked down or relegated, but unfortunately, they just weren't good enough in the spring. So they have, as we've been seeing through here between Porto, we'll get to Perry Pons, but Fernando Espinosa, they have been picked apart one by one. With Espanyol, the big pickup this season, Mateus Vargas, 22-year-old, coming from Vélez Sarsfield, so in Argentina. So he's not a brand new commodity as a player, but he has been playing his trade in Argentina, and he's really going to have to be the key. As the attacking midfielder, he's really going to have to be their key this season, I believe, at Espanyol. But again, they've been able to do more with less for the last few seasons now, and I think, if anything, they're in a positive direction, having finished 7th last season.
Yeah, definitely, and I think we're going to get to see just how impressive what Ruby did last season was, finishing the top half with them. He's obviously gone to Real Betis now, and they've brought in David Gallego, who I'd be honest, I don't really know too much about. But Hermoso is going to be a massive loss for them. Aaron Martin as well is quite a devastating blow for them. He's so young, given the fact that he's so young. It's going to be like Espanyol are one of those teams who haven't really had much of an identity in recent years. It looks like they might also lose Borja Iglesias to Betis. So they could very well slip back down into those relegation areas. I guess we'll have to wait and see what kind of identity they have, how they cope with the loss of Ruby, how important Ruby actually was. And it's going to be, only time will tell on that one, I guess.
Well, a team that was expected to be in the relegation battle last year, but instead was fighting for the Champions League for at least until about February, until when things really, really fell off. That's Deportivo Alaves, who wound up finishing 11th. Again, they were in 5th place pretty much halfway through the season. They bring in Lucas Perez from West Ham, Joselu from Newcastle, Pere Pons from Girona, and Ramon Mirez from Tigre in Argentina. 3 of those 4 are center forwards. You'd expect that they're going to try to be making up for the 9 goals they lose through Jonathan Colleri, unless they find a way to bring him back. He went back to his club, his native club in South America, but we'll see if he is not brought back once again. But again, all that said, it seems like 3 of the 4 are center forwards, and Deportivo Alaves understands what the issue they had and what they needed to bring in, and it seems like they have given attention to their spot of need.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and Lucas Perez, he was absolutely excellent at Deport. Didn't obviously do it at Arsenal or at West Ham. So yeah, he'll be happy to be back in the north of Spain, I'm guessing. Another strange one, like, as in, they pushed really, really hard for in Europe, massively unexpected, obviously. They lost Abelardo. So they're another team that we're just going to have to wait and see, like, how impressive they're going to be, or what kind of an identity they have next season. Because it's kind of a lot of kind of churn there in the transfer market. But again, it's going to be really difficult to see just what Garitano plays quite a conservative style. He did so at Leganés, obviously, and we'll see. Yeah, I mean, I guess we just have to see what kind of an identity he brings to the team.
Well, next up, the most impressive team, as opposed to as well as doing the most with least, Eibar finished 12th last season. their three pickups all come from the Segunda division, so they don't have yet to really sign somebody of note from La Liga. They get Edu Exposito from Deportivo Coruña, as you said, as well as Kike from Coruña, Pedro Bigas from Las Palmas. They did lose Jean Jordan for 14 million euros. So they, for once, I think maybe ever, Eibar does have a little bit of money to spend. They also actually gained a profit on Cucurella, who they had on loan last season, wound up buying and then was bought back by Barcelona. And Ruben Peña goes to Villarreal. So they do lose those three pieces. Again, Jordan was so, so important to them last season. And they're just looking to believe in their own talent evaluation by using Segunda Division players. Again, they're going to pocket a little bit of the Jordan money. So they're one of those teams that I don't know if their transfer business is all the way done. But if Eibar's history is any indication, and by that I mean their recent La Liga history, they're really not going to be spending money. And they're just going to believe in their system. And they are that seemingly that one team. On the you watch from the far view of their stadium, it's a stadium that doesn't look like it belongs in La Liga because, I mean, visually it really doesn't. But they're a scrappy team that seems to know how to get results in the Liga over the last few seasons. And I think, again, their transfer window is not indicative of how they finish in the season.
No, absolutely. And yeah, as you said, they're relying on Mendilibar to coach the players up that they bring in. Some nice young players like Alvaro Tejero came in from Real Madrid. Castilla, an excellent left back with plenty of room to grow. I'm sure Mendilibar is going to make him better. Exposito as well, 22. And Roberto Olave from Atletico Madrid B as well. And then they've also added like that little bit of experience up front with Kike, who was massively impressive last season for Deport. He got he scored like 15 or 16 goals as Deport, and Deport were not by any means an attacking team last season. So and as you said, they're not a team that's going to go out and start spending tens of millions of euro in the transfer market. They're going to rely on Mendilibar to coach the players up, and but Johan Jordan is a massive loss. But I wouldn't, as you said, a tiny team beating the odds every single season. They're not looking to, obviously they wouldn't reject the chance if it fell to them, but they're not a team looking to get into Europe. They're just kind of trying to, not so much tread water, but mid-table and just keep growing slowly but surely. I'm sure they'll keep doing that next season as well.
And what about another Madrid-based team? Finished 13th last season in Leganés. They bring in Jonathan Silva, left back from Sporting CP, Fede Varela, attacking midfielder from Porto, Juan Munoz from Alcorcón, the center forward, and Sabine Marino from Athletic Bilbao. Another team that's not going to spend a lot in the transfer window. It's all about the system. And again, that's another name in Leganés that I always wonder when things are going to stop working out, but again, they continue to stay up in the Liga last season, again, finishing 13th.
Yeah, I'd have a little bit more faith than a lot of people, because a lot of people are saying they're definitely relegation fodder. Because when you look at Pellegrino's track record, he was at Alaves, but he was only there for a year. And he left then for a bigger job, which didn't work out in the Premier League. He's back now, and I thought they were a really good team especially against the bigger teams. Like, they bet Barcelona last season, really tough to play against. And I'd say, I apologize for saying this for every team, but they're another team that are kind of relying on their coach to give them an identity and to make them hard to beat, I guess. Obviously, they're another team that's a little bit too small for La Liga. Not too small, but they're a small team historically. So they're just another team that will be happy to maybe sit mid-table, and they're not going to be driving on for the Champions League. They haven't really spent that much money. They haven't spent much money at all in the transfer market. Getting Jonathan Silva back is massive. He was really good for them last season from left back, kind of almost like an added attacker at times, given his propensity to get forward, I'd say. But another team just kind of relying on Pellegrino to make sure that he instills that identity further in them and makes them even tougher to beat. And this is his second year, obviously, so he'll have that kind of another summer under his belt, and I think they're actually going to maybe exceed expectations next season.
Well, I think there's a team that may not be able to exceed expectations. Having finished 10th last year, Real Betis, who were expected to be competing for a Champions League spot. Giovanni Lo Celso seems, even though they bought him permanently, it seems like they won't be hanging on to him and he might be making the move very soon. But they did basically get the best deal of the summer, 20 million euros for Nabil Fekir from Lyon. We knew that he was going to go somewhere over the last few seasons. We thought it was Liverpool for a long time. So he comes from Lyon. They have Juanmi from Real Sociedad brought in. Danny Martin comes in from Sporting Gijón with the note that they did lose Pau Lopez. So he leaves Spain for the rest of Europe, we'll say. And then Emerson, the young Brazilian fullback with the financial split with Barcelona, he'll continue his progress at Betis next year. And we talked about managers and their impact. And I think Real Betis, because of all the news about Quique Setién. I mean, we had three full shows about Quique Setién because of the buzz and all the things that came about him potentially being a Barcelona manager and what he was doing on the field, and yet he doesn't even last at Real Betis. So I think this, we've been keep saying it, and you know, you're doing a great job, Robert, I think, of making it known that for all the transfer business that happens, if the manager cannot make that potluck into something tasty, it's not going to work out. So how will Ruby do is the big question at Betis, obviously.
Yeah, I've heard quotes from him, and I think one of the things that he's trying to make sure to do is he said a couple of times that we're going to be more attacking, more vertical. It had more direct, I think, is what he was saying, and he's trying to kind of shed that those bad feelings that the fans had over Setién, because it really did get quite, maybe not nasty at Betis at the end, but they were definitely really annoyed with how they played and the kind of the how docile they were in games, dominating possession for really long spells and then getting hit for two on the break, and just really naive stuff, I think. So I think Ruby is coming in and he's going to make sure that they're way more direct in how they play. Losing Pau Lopez, to be honest with you, Pau Lopez is a player that I never really... Like Spurs were linked to him. I was never a huge fan of him. I think, and I know I'm probably just have it in my head now, but he just looks kind of awkward and he looks a little bit nervous or something. So Danny Martin coming in is maybe not an upgrade, but in a couple of years, definitely that's going to be seen as a good deal for Betis. And and they have that. I guess Betis would be historically massive, big club in Spain, and they've got that kind of, as you said, that hipster kind of vibe, that kind of nice football. So I think players, the likes of Lo Celso and players like that, really do want to go and move there and to progress. Like we saw the likes of Budapest going there, it didn't work out for him, but the likes of Victor Camarasso played there and trying to kind of develop further, and Fekir obviously going there now and trying to maybe... Obviously, the interest wasn't there for him. Liverpool were linked last season, but that all died down, and Betis was probably the biggest club he could get to this summer. But he probably saw Betis as the chance to go to a club in a massive city with a diehard fan base who historically played nice football. And he sees that as a chance to kind of maybe drive his stock up again. So, again, it's all about how Ruby kind of gets rid of those scars left over from Setién's tenure and gets them playing in a more, gets the fans behind him and gets them playing in a more kind of a spirited way, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're preaching to the choir when it comes to the Pau Lopez hate. He is notoriously hated by or distasted by a lot of Barcelona fans. He's known for being very antagonistic towards Messi in the penalty box. He always seems to leave a foot in or a cleat high. So yeah, Pau Lopez, for being Catalan, raised in the Espanol system, not too well liked by culés. So I think they'll be happy to see him leave Betis. So from one traditionally big team to, I guess we'll say, another in the new millennium, at least, in Villarreal, they finished 14th last season. They were fighting relegation for much of the year. They bring in Ruben Peña from Eibar, Raul Albiol returns to La Liga, and Alberto Moreno comes from Liverpool on a free. So Villarreal, they had a lot of places to fix and a lot of work to do, and I don't know if their transfer business so far has indicated that they've done enough.
Yeah, I think maybe what it signifies is that they think last year maybe was a little bit of an aberration. It was a little bit of a, I'm not sure if that's the right word. It was a bit of a
an outlier.
And I think that maybe they were looking at it going, we're actually not as bad as we played last season. We've got plenty of talent, and we will show who we really are this season. Maybe. They obviously saw fullback as an issue because they brought in three this summer, and it's kind of a strange one because they brought in Moreno for arguably the worst defensive team in the league last season. They brought in Alberto Moreno, who was absolutely lambasted at Liverpool for his defensive lapses. But yeah, I think you're right. I mean, they maybe believe that they're good enough, and they do have plenty of attacking talent. They've got Cazorla, and young Manu Morlanes in midfield is excellent. They've got Samuel Chukwueze, one of the most exciting young players in the league. I'm a huge fan of Ekambi. Maybe not a huge fan, but I think he's definitely a serviceable attack striker. Jared Moreno had an off year after being on fire for Espanyol. I think they'll probably regress to the mean next season, and I think that that's what they're hoping for. But if this actually is who they truly are, then they're going to be in trouble all year, and they're not going to have a chance to fix it once the transfer window closes.
Yeah, that's. I think Chukwueze has the potential really to be a star this season. I think you could argue that he almost was last year, but he is going to, I believe, get sold next summer for a large amount of money. And as you mentioned as well, Santi Cazorla, maybe the most well-liked player. I think it's almost not an argument that he's the most well-liked player in Spain. He might be top three most well-liked players in all of world football. Not as in he has fans, but as it's hard to see Santi Cazorla lose. And you always he seems to pull on the heartstrings because of how his footballing journey and just getting back to where he is now to still being able to play top-flight football. Absolutely incredible. And so for me, and I think a lot of people, you just want the best for Santi Cazorla.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that smile he has could just light up any stadium, really, couldn't it?
Yeah, and speaking of lighting up stadium, Levante did not do too much of that last year, but they always, again, for the last few seasons, do enough to stay up. They finished 15th last season. Ruben Vessel from Valencia, Sergio Leon, Wantaway Real Betis center forward, and Gonzalo Molero from Huesca, as they also got picked apart just like Girona. That's what happened when you get relegated. But Levante doing what I think is expected of them in the transfer window, bringing in just a little bit of depth. Again, Leon, I think, of the three, along with Vesso, will most likely be the guys who could make the biggest impact for Levante next season. And I think Vesso has the opportunity of maybe becoming one of Levante's most important pieces next year.
Yeah, and it looks like they're kind of knuckling down for a relegation scrap, kind of adding that depth and making sure that they can stay healthier than the opposition. Gonzalo Molero, who was really good for Huesca for a couple of years, but maybe he was in and out of the team last season. It looked like his confidence was absolutely shattered. He could be a massive signing for them, but again, it looks like they're just kind of adding depth, adding experience, and getting kind of knuckling down for a relegation fight.
Yeah, Real Valladolid finished 16th, doing the exact same thing. They bring in old Barcelona boy Sandro Ramirez, who's bounced around. I think when we signed for Everton back a few seasons ago, I think everybody kind of agreed that it was a worrisome thing for the player's career, and indeed it has been. He's been just out on loans, hasn't really developed in the ways that he's expected. It was always him and Munir, and Munir has obviously didn't survive at Barcelona, but he's become a much better professional. So Ramirez, still in his early 20s, though, his career is not over in the least, and he still has time. This could be another reclamation project for him at Valladolid. Pablo Herves from Eibar comes as well as Jorge de Frutos coming from Real Madrid's youth system. But he's not really a young player either. He's somebody who's been kind of bounced around and, you know, never really was going to be expected to make it at Real Madrid. He just simply was on their books eventually to be sold. So for Real Valladolid, again, just bringing a little more depth.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's Sandro one. Ronaldo obviously has the connections, so I wouldn't be surprised if they did bring in maybe a couple more players before the window closes. I would imagine if there's anyone going spare at Real Madrid, Florentino Perez will be on the phone to him offering them up. They were linked with Lunin, the Real Madrid's goalkeeper, so he was obviously named the best goalkeeper at the under 20 World
Cup. Yeah, he was terrific for
Ukraine.
Yeah, terrific.
Yeah, it didn't go as planned at Leganés last season, but definitely excellent. Would be an excellent signing. There was talk that Vinicius might go there, but yeah, we'll have to wait and see. But Sandro Ramirez is an interesting one because obviously, and it's so interesting as to how one decision can kind of make or break a player's career. I remember Sandro Ramirez was so close to moving to Atletico Madrid. That fell through. He ended up going to Everton, and then all of a sudden he's been kind of bouncing around. He went to Real Sociedad last year, just never got going at all again. And it's good for him maybe to start the season with Valladolid and get a good pre-season and kind of integrate into that team. And if he could get 10 or 12 goals, that might be the difference maker for them as they probably battle relegation next season.
Well, speaking of former Barcelona reclamation projects, Denis Suarez moves to Celta de Vigo, who finished a disappointing 17th last season. Joseph Aidoo comes from Genk from Belgium, and Santi Mina, who, as we talked about, in a swap, basically a swap for Maxi Gomez, who obviously goes to Valencia. And for Mina, he, I think, has always been a good servant, and his, for me, his floor, we'll say, you know how a player would have a ceiling and a floor? I think his floor is actually pretty high and is going to be helpful to Celta de Vigo. I think Denis Suarez is going to give them just a little bit. If they can hang on to Bryce Mendes and obviously their talisman in Iago Aspas. And here's the thing. I mean, we know the answer. Even though they had a little bit of transfer business bringing in these three players, for Celta de Vigo, if they can keep Iago Aspas, who is getting a little long in the tooth, if they can keep him healthy, they have a good chance to finish basically around the middle of the table. And if not, as he wasn't healthy last season, they're fighting relegation. And that seems to be the way it's going to be. And Celta de Vigo long-term, maybe it's Santi Mina, but they're going to have to figure out a way to help out Aspas until it's time that he hangs his boots up. Then they're going to have to figure out how to replace him. I don't really know how they're going to do that.
Yeah, it looks like they're actually trying to do that with Suarez and Santi Mina, both Celta Vigo youngsters. And they've got Felipe Miñambres, who was the Rayo Vallecano sporting director, and he did a really good job. It was during that spell where Rayo were in La Liga for the longest spell in their history. I think it was 6 years they were in La Liga under Paco Gemes. They finished eighth 1 year, their top. But the point is that Miñambres did a really good job of kind of that kind of almost like the Monchi treatment, where a lot of turnover, kind of seemed to be able to find a deal, was able to extract money from players, and that looks, it looks like that's what they've done. I mean, Maxi Gomez, they probably thought that they had maxed out his product in Vigo, and got rid of him, and they brought in young guys who can step in when Aspas maybe isn't up to it, who kind of get the club, who understand it, and who can kind of give them that identity that Aspas, that they miss when Aspas isn't there.
Yeah, it will be a challenge, but I'm excited to see exactly what Santi Mina, and again, I'm also hoping that Denis Suarez can finally, for once, get the keys to a midfield and show what he can do. Whether or not he plays even on the wing, a guy in their mid-20s who doesn't, I feel like, have a permanent position that you know that he's going to be slotted in at, I hope he can finally find that. So that brings us to our three promoted sides in Osasuna, Granada, and Mallorca. We're going to start with Osasuna. They were the team that won the Segunda Division. They deserve this. They make the return to La Liga. And what Osasuna might be known for by culés is the fact that Messi bangs in just an astronomical amount of goals against them. I don't know why he loves playing against Osasuna so much, but it seems like every time they're up against one another, Messi is all over the back of the net. They bring in Ruben Garcia from Levante, Chimi Avila from San Lorenzo in Argentina, as well as Barcelona product Marc Cardona, who actually wasn't too bad last season playing in the Liga as well. So Osasuna, again, they were the best team in Segunda Division. I think on paper they have as good a shot as any of the guys fighting relegation of surviving next season.
Yeah, definitely. And like Jimmy Avila, that addition is definitely of note. Really good for Huesca last season. And also Pervis Estupiñán, who was with Mallorca. He was really good for Mallorca at times last season. Ruben Garcia was arguably the best player in the Segunda Division last season. So yeah, I mean they're having a go at it. And it'll be just interesting to see how they hold up after winning Segunda so easily. Sometimes it kind of doesn't pan out as because they feel like they won Segunda so easily. Sometimes teams feel like they don't have to do as much in the transfer market, don't have to switch up as much, and then they kind of get into it and they're like, okay, we're not good enough here. As opposed to maybe a team that comes up through the playoffs and knows that they need to change things and improve. So yeah, it's just a matter of how they adapt.
And one of those teams that knew they need to improve, Granada, brings in Domingos Duarte from Sporting CP and Jan Bryce from Sevilla, but he was loaned to Almeria last season, so he'll come in to add depth as well. But Granada, they're an interesting team because of the way that they went down all those years ago. I can't think of a team that went out in such a how do I say it? The opposite of a blaze of glory, if you will. Just a whimper.
Flamed out.
Exactly. Flaming out and whimpering out. They had a terrible transfer policy. They were paying way too much for players, and the wage bill wound up just crushing the team, and they basically had to rebuild everything. Rebuild how they take in loans, how they utilize youth players, and it looks like Granada have, in the last 2-3 seasons, figured it out, and they make their return to the Liga almost as a new franchise, if you will, even though it's the same old Granada.
Yeah, definitely. And I think they kind of got a proper kick in the stomach when they did go down. I remember back then, I don't think they had one player from Granada, and they got relegated, and their whole policy changed. They were going to bring in more young talent, give themselves that identity, give the city something, because Granada is a wonderful city. And it's kind of on its own there, so they have all the backing from the people of the city. So they wanted to get the people behind them again, give themselves that kind of identity, and they definitely got it. Were really good last season in Segunda, and it'll be interesting again to see what Roberto Soldado looks like, a really good signing. He could be because it's a lot of these teams, like, you're looking for that one player who can get you maybe 8, 10, 12 goals and make that difference, maybe someone like the way Rayo had. I know he couldn't make the difference, but the likes of Raul de Thomas, who can just change the complex of your team completely, and I'm sure Granada would be hoping that Soldado can do that for them.
Well, if I'm Roberto Soldado, who's played his for so many teams in the Liga, I'm just going bench to bench trying to see if anyone notices I put on a new jersey throughout the season just to try to finish in the top 10 if I'm Roberto Soldado. But I guess it's good to see him back in the Liga. Again, he is, again, getting up there in age, but we'll see what he has left in the tank. That we're going to end this with our final team, the team that got through the Segunda Division playoffs, that being Mallorca. And I'm going to start here where I'm going to make Mallorca a little bit of a Dan sandwich, if you will, Robbie, where I'm going to introduce Mallorca, then I got a little bit of a rant about this team at the end. And I want to start by prefacing to say that for me, Mallorca, when they were in their heyday in the early 2000s, that was one of the first times I was able to see La Liga on television, and not even Liga matches, but even just see highlights or things like that. I would watch on the little grainy. Here in the United States, I would watch, you know, basically through the streaks of colored lines, if you will, on the TV. And I always liked what Mallorca had. They seemed to be an exciting team in their heyday. It's when I was able to, again, first watch Spanish soccer. So I have a special place in my heart for Mallorca. But let's get to how they're trying to run their business. The exciting thing for them, though, they were able to make the loan deals of Ante Budimir and Martin Valgent, who were both really important parts, their center forward and one of their center backs. They made both of them permanent from their Italian teams. They brought Ilesh Febes, who was a longtime Real Madrid player, actually is a Catalan player, but grew up in the Real Madrid youth system. He was loaned to Albacete last season. He was really, really good for them, I thought, in the 2 or 3 matches I was able to see for Albacete. And then they brought in Alex Alegria, who was quite far down the Batiste center forward depth chart. But it does seem like they brought in a little bit of talent, but as you had mentioned even earlier, they lose one of their best players, Osasuna, and they are a team that has a lot of experience, not a lot of young players, But still, Mallorca is a team that, having made two jumps now in two seasons, all the way from the third division, which was, as they said at the time, just a travesty and came out because of a lack of money, but they've come all the way back to the league in two seasons, I think in itself is an exciting story. But will that story be able to galvanize them now back in the Liga?
Yeah, they've got a really good coach in Vicente Moreno, who was probably the best coach in the Segunda Division last season. And as you said, really exciting team. Kind of, you could see what it meant to the island when they got promoted last season, coming back against the odds against Depor. Really fascinating team to watch last season as well. Really attacking. Got like Lago Junior, who I'm a huge fan of, on the wing, and really kind of a really kind of dynamic team. The likes of Danny Rodriguez as well, who's kind of getting a little bit older now too, but like this kind of really dynamic side. And I'll be interested to see how they do. Obviously, adding Febas, and as you said, making that second jump in 3 years in two summers, it might be a stretch for them. But Vicente Moreno, probably because he looks a little bit like him too, but he really reminds me of Girona's ex-coach, Pablo Machin, who I thought was absolutely brilliant, and I'm surprised he hasn't really gotten a shot anywhere else yet. But kind of this really confident, idealistic coach who kind of inspires confidence in his side. And I really like, he kind of gives the team that kind of little bit of an oomph that they need. So maybe he'll be able to navigate them out of relegation trouble, but we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, and I just want to go over behind the scenes a little bit. As we're talking about Mallorca, if you will, their fall from grace, in January of 2016, for 20 million euros at the time, they were bought by Robert Sarver, who, for regular listeners of the podcast, I seem to get a lot of positive feedback about my random NBA tirades. But Robert Sarver, for those who also follow the NBA here in the United States, he is the owner of the Phoenix Suns, and he bought them again for just a wonderful profit for him, 20 million euros back in 2016, and now to see that they've gone back to the Liga. Part of that ownership group is well-known celebrities, including a United States men's national team player, Stuart Holden, played for Bolton Wanderers back in the day, and then Phoenix Suns longtime point guard Steve Nash, who happens also to be my favorite basketball player. But with all those little asides, Robert Sarver is not known in the NBA and in basketball circles as being a terrific owner. He's a guy that doesn't really like to spend money. He's a guy that tends to mismanage things. Now, the only difference here is that Robert Sarver is quite hands-off with Mallorca. It's not like he makes decisions or has an office in the training facilities or anything like that. So it is a little hands-off. But that said, I noticed that in January, I had seen, I think back in the fall, Pablo Ramon, who was a 17-year-old center back for Mallorca. He made one or two appearances last year for the first team. But anyway, he's considered one of the top prospects in Spain, or at least even in the Segunda Division. And then Xavi Sintes, who's even younger. He was 16 on 17 last season. That combo, Pablo Ramon and Xavi Sintes, were sold to Real Madrid's U19 squad in January and became complete this summer for 1 million euros. And the worrisome thing there for me, Robbie, is that for Mallorca, for as exciting as their story is, and we talked about the fact that a lot of their core is much older, that Mallorca, I think, unfortunately, instead of holding on to Ramon and Sintes the best they could, they just took the deal of 1 million and now lost their, and I do say this, their two top prospects. And then beyond that, I don't know if they really, I don't know how many other prospects beyond that they have. Again, I don't know the Mallorca full use system that well, but I know the two names that made appearances for Spanish national teams, youth national teams, if you will, and things like that, were sold for just 1 million in a combo deal. And to me, I think it's a disheartening sign of having their top prospects that are very close to the first team. So instead of Pablo Ramon making a first team or making 10 first team appearances for Mallorca next season in La Liga, he instead is going to potentially make some appearances for Real Madrid in 3 or 4 years, or potentially maybe he'll be playing for Deportivo Alaves in 5 years. And I think that's just, it's nothing against these two players. I really do hope they succeed, even going to Real Madrid. But all that said, it's a worrying sign of business to me. And I don't know, Robbie, my thing is this me just trying to make a connection between what I see in a worrying NBA owner owning Mallorca? Or do you think there's something more to this, or do you think I'm making a big deal out of nothing?
No, but I mean, obviously, if he's got his hand tightly clasped around the purse strings, he's that way in general. So maybe it's a case that Mallorca have not I don't mean gotten lucky, but they've kind of maybe they've gotten to this point based on Moreno's management, and they're probably a little bit ahead of schedule, and all of a sudden they're in La Liga and they're sitting there thinking, okay, this has ever happened in 3 years too soon. What do we do now?
Yeah.
Maybe, and I'm just saying that, and all of a sudden it just kind of goes belly up this season, maybe, but because they haven't really done too much in the transfer market. But yeah, I don't know. But I mean, it's a kind of an interesting one because you've got Alcorcon have new American owners as well. And you'd wonder, like it's an interesting one to kind of dive into to see what kind of level of involvement the likes of Steve Nash has as well. But they've got like a really good CEO there, and he was speaking, and I actually can't think of his name at the moment. But yeah, like I mean, he's done an excellent job. So maybe it's being run by the club, and that's kind of an out server, and those are an outside, are completely outside. But the problem is going to be when it comes to start maybe signing some checks, they're not going to be there to do it.
Yep. Their CEO, Mahedo Malongo. Correct. We have heard that he has had some success there. And you're right that having American ownership being hands-off, but in the same respect as we even saw here in Major League Soccer in MLS with Robert Kraft, who has all the success for the New England Patriots, you always wonder what kind of money he's willing to put into the New England Revolution, which he also owns. It's almost an afterthought that he also owns the New England Revolution. So that can happen a lot here with American ownership. But in the same respect, John Henry owns Liverpool, and they win the Champions League because of the investment he's put in. So again, I don't think there's a blanket statement about American ownership coming into world football, but Mallorca is the latest test subject of all of that. Robbie, it's a credit to you, after all this time, after more than an hour of breaking down every other team in the Liga other than that, we're still talking in the weeds about the most minute things in the Liga, and that is, again, a testament to your hard work as a La Liga journalist, as a correspondent covering all of that. So I ask you, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Robbie J. Dunn. That's where I usually do most of my hanging out.
And you can also find his work in AS as well. And again, he is a good follow on Twitter. He was breaking down a lot of the Gareth Bale stuff. And I know that he does have a lot of tweets about Real Madrid, but again, he is not a Real Madrid reporter. That is not what he is. He's a Liga journalist. So give him a follow, certainly, there. Robbie, again, this was an excellent show. Thank you so much for helping me with what really did turn into a La Liga preview. That's what this is. That's going to be the show here. So thanks to you, and thanks to our listeners for tuning in. They can tap in the app and follow you on Twitter. Just again, hit Robbie Dunn's name in the show notes. You can also subscribe to us on social media. We're on Twitter at the Barcelona Pod, or at HiltonD13 for me, and on Instagram at the Barcelona Pod. Our closed Facebook group is tbpod.link/group for deeper dive and discussions. That's where we get our La Ronda questions usually. And our Patreon shows at tbpod.link/Patreon. That's where we do the match reviews, and that is where you can get the Barcelona-Chelsea match review that should have already come out by the time this podcast is hitting your ears. We also have a YouTube channel where we have a video coming out tomorrow about players who have things to prove in the preseason, that being Barcelona players. So you can check that out at the Barcelona Podcast YouTube channel. Check us out, hit that subscription button, and thanks so much for listening to this, the Barcelona Podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. Fuerza Barça.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.